Welcome to the Jacksonville First Seventh-day Adventist Church podcast, where we listen, learn, and love together. Our speaker today is Pastor Jonathan Pinato.
Revelation chapter 17, verse 3 through 4. And the angel carried me, John, the angel carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. And I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was full of blasphemous names. It had seven heads and ten horns, and the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and jewels and pearls and holding in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the filth of her sexual immorality. And on her forehead was written a name of mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of prostitutes and of earth's abominations. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs, verse 5, and then verse 6. And when I saw her, I marveled with great admiration. Now, as I was reading this, I was kind of puzzled. And this is kind of following the King James version here. I marveled with great admiration. And as I'm reading this passage, I'm thinking, here's the Apostle John, and he's seen this in vision. And he's seen this prostitute, and he's seen this woman, and he's seen, like he says, holding the cup of the filth of her abominations in her hand, and having the blood of the martyrs and of God's people, having spilled them. And then my immediate response, I don't know if you see it here, but my mind is, why does John marvel with great admiration? You know, I'm like, I wouldn't be marveling. I wouldn't have great admiration. Like I said, I'm following the King James right here because it's interesting. Different Bible translations translate this little phrase a little bit differently. In the Greek, though, are you ready here? In the Greek, it's ethumasa thumao mega. That's what that word is. And those first two words that you see in the Greek, ethumasa thauma, those are like the same words. They're just kind of conjugated a little bit differently, but they're repeated. And every time the Greek repeats like the same word twice, it's because it's giving it emphasis. Now, some translations just say, and I marveled greatly, but some of the more literal translations, they kind of are redundant, and they repeat that like the King James here. It says, and I marveled, ethumasa, I marveled with great admiration, ethumasa thauma. I marveled. It's literally what it means. I marveled greatly, emphasizing the point. Doesn't make sense in English, but in Greek, it's trying to give that emphasis there. Why in the world would John marvel at what he's seen? Now, some scholars, they suggest that because this is the woman of Revelation 12, corrupted. Do you guys remember that point? Some scholars say that because this is the woman of Revelation 12, corrupted at the end of time, that this word real here, translated marveled and admiration, should have a negative connotation. It should be translated more as, I was astonished or I was appalled by what I saw. Some scholars say that because John has just saw that this woman has spilled the blood of the saints, that the scene is overwhelming, that the word should be translated negatively to say, I was seized with horror, or I was horrified, I was affrighted. And this word here, thauma, is in certain places, especially in the Old Testament, translated in a negative way, as negatively, as astonished, as seized with horror and affrighted. But what's interesting, though, and that's actually kind of my personal take on this passage here, but the majority of Bible translations translate this phrase not negatively, but they translate this phrase positively, as you see on the screen there, which follows the King James, I marveled with great admiration. Or some other translations said, I wondered with great admiration. The New Living Translation says, I stared at her in complete amazement. Why? Why would John do that? Now, when we look at the evidence for the use of this word, and we're going to go into a word study right now of thauma in Scripture, the evidence suggests that the way this word is used, it's used several times. John, as I call it, the Johannine writings, John uses this word several times in his writings. Now, do you remember the books that John wrote? The Gospel of John? All right, that's kind of a giving. And there's actually three others. The epistles, right? First, second, third John, right? All right, that's very good. And then finally, he wrote the book of Revelation. So the Apostle John wrote five books in the New Testament, all right? And John uses this word several times, especially in his gospel, thauma, which is translated marveled or wondered. And he uses this word a lot of times in reference to Jesus. And it has a positive connotation. In other words, when Jesus did a miracle, then John will write that the people marveled. And they said, how can this man do such great and amazing things? And so as John is using this word, the majority of the times, it has a positive connotation. In the book of Revelation, John uses this word six times. And again, it seems that almost all of them have a positive connotation. The first time it's used in Revelation 13:3, where it says, and the whole world wondered after the beast, right? The whole world is captivated by the beast. And it's, again, it's in a positive sense, why, even though it may be negative what they're doing, but they're marveled, they're blown away by what the beast is doing. It's also used in Revelation 15 and verse 1 when it mentions the seven angels of the seven last plagues. It says, a great and marvelous sign, it says, appeared in heaven. It's that same word, thauma, in the Greek. And it actually even uses the word great, which is mega, which are both words are used there in Revelation 17. A great and marvelous sign. And then a few verses later in verse 3, it uses this word again in reference to God. Notice the context. It says great, mega in the Greek. Great and marvelous, thauma. Great and marvelous are your deeds, Lord God Almighty. Just and true are your ways, King of Nations. Who will not fear you, Lord, and bring glory to your name? For you alone are holy, and all nations will come and worship before you. And it's hard for me to read those words without getting excited. It's just an incredible scene. And God's people are shouting this out. Great and marvelous are your ways. Now, this word is not used in Revelation 19 or 22, but the context, though, it seems that though the word is not present, the concept is present. Revelation 19, John is shown something by the angel, and John is overwhelmed. And do you remember what John does in front of the angel? Yes, he bows down and he wants to worship. And what does the angel tell him? No, don't do it, right? Don't worship, right? In other words, the idea is John is overwhelmed by what he sees and he bows down to worship thauma. It's marvelous. He does it again in Revelation chapter 22. He sees the angel again. He wants to bow down again and worship the angel. And the angel says, don't do it. In other words, these words are used, this word thauma in the Greek in Revelation is used in a positive sense. And so here too, click on the slide, in Revelation chapter 17, verse 6, John sees the woman, he looks at her, he sees in the vision the description of it, and here too, believe it or not, in awe and wonder and beauty, he sees the beauty of Babylon, and he's blown away by what he sees. And so that's why the angel asks him, when I saw her, I marveled with great admiration, but then in verse 7, the angel says to me, why do you marvel? Why do you marvel? Same thing John is, the angel is telling John in Revelation 19 and 20. Why are you worshiping? Don't worship. Why are you marveling at what you see? You see, my friends, the truth is Babylon is not unattractive. Did you hear what I said? Babylon is not unattractive. Babylon is amazing. Babylon is marvelous. Babylon is beautiful. But what happens is oftentimes the things that are most attractive in the world are the things that are most wrong with the world. And so what I want to do now is I want to spend a little time looking at the beauty of Babylon, if you guys don't mind. The beauty of Babylon. Oh, let's look at this. Let's look at this. Let's spend some time looking at the beauty of Babylon. I do have to give a disclaimer. Do you guys remember Pastor Roger Hernandez, who was here last year, and he led out in the Hope series, the Hope Evangelistic series? And I don't know if he said this. I think he said this in the meetings or something like that, so I have to be careful here. You know, I want to give a disclaimer. He mentions that, and I don't know if this just happens in the Hispanic churches or not, or I'm not sure if it's a cultural thing or not, but he says, you know, when I was a kid growing up in the churches, the pastors would always preach about, like, the evils of, like, rock music, right? And he says, and they would just, the whole sermon was about rock music and how terrible rock music was, and the pastor spent so much time talking about rock music that at the end of the sermon, you know, Roger was like, oh, let me check out rock music. I wonder what that's all about. Right? And it kind of had the opposite effect, all right? So as we take some time right now to look at the beauty of Babylon, I hope that doesn't happen to you guys, right? I hope you guys don't say, oh, Babylon, let me check this out. What's that all about? No. Because God has something better and of more value than Babylon, all right? So let's go now to Revelation chapter 18 and verse 9. And this is the chapter that follows Revelation 17. Revelation 17 presents Babylon. Revelation 18, it speaks about the fall of Babylon. And the chapter is introduced that way with saying Babylon is fallen. And we'll come back to that introduction towards the end of our sermon here. But just notice what it says here in verse 9. Speaking about the describing Babylon to us in verse 9, it says, "The kings of the earth who have committed sexual immorality with her, and they lived in luxury with her. They will weep and they will wail over her when they see the smoke of her burning, and they will stand afar off and they will say, 'Alas, alas, you great city, you mighty city Babylon.'" In fact, in verse 3, if you can see it there in your Bibles, it says, it speaks about the merchants of the earth. The merchants of the earth, they have grown rich, it says, from her excessive luxury. And so one of the things that we're going to find out is that Babylon offers wealth and Babylon offers luxury. And now, I'm not against wealth here, and I just want to say that. I mean, if God has blessed you and you've been able to put away wealth or to have wealth, you know, I think that's a blessing. We're not against wealth. What we're against, or what the Bible speaks against, is excess. And so that's what we're going to look about right now. But, you know, let me just ask you this question. I mean, if you guys have to choose between being wealthy or poor, wealth or poverty, if you guys had to choose between wealth or poverty, which one would you choose? And be honest. All right, let me see hands here. How many of you would choose poverty? If you had the option, choosing wealth or poverty. All right, we got one hand. All right, one hand. All right, how many of you would choose wealth? Raise your hands high, and I'm raising my hand. Every single time, I would choose wealth. Every single time. All right, and for those of you who didn't vote, I mean, what would you guys choose? I don't know. All right. Now, I always kind of joke that my favorite Bible verse is Ecclesiastes 10:19, and there Solomon says, "Money is the answer to everything." Yes, it's in there. Look it up in the Bible. All right. So I would choose wealth every single time. If I have to choose between poverty or wealth, I would choose wealth every single time. I'm reminded of a little scene in The Fiddler on the Roof. Have you guys seen that movie, Fiddler on the Roof? All right. I remember the first time I saw it. I was probably like 8 years old, and my mom showed it to me, and I thought it was like the most boring movie in the world. And then I grew up, and I lived a little bit, and I saw it again when I was an adult already. And I watched it, and I was like, man, that movie is so good. Man, that movie is so relevant. And it speaks to so many issues that we're dealing with. But there's a scene there when Tevye, I think it's around the area where he starts singing, "If I Were a Rich Man." And he starts describing what he would do if he had money, if he had wealth. And some of those things are good, and some of those things perhaps aren't so good. And then during that scene that he's thinking about if he was a rich man, his communist son-in-law comes and tells him, "Money is the curse of the world." To which Tevye responds and he says, "Well, then, may the Lord smite me with it and may I never recover." You see, Babylon offers us the lure of wealth. It offers us the lure of luxury. It entices us with wealth and luxury, but the truth is it's only the 1% who actually achieve it. And the rest of us are simply scrambling for the leftovers. Whereas God does not promise us in Scripture wealth or luxury, but what he does promise us, if we are faithful stewards, he promises to provide for all our needs. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 6, the Apostle Paul says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain." And that word there for gain is actually the word for income or for profit. In other words, he's saying, if you have godliness and if you have contentment, then that is true profit. That is financial gain right there. I mean, how many wealthy people do we know that are not happy? You know, and I look at them and I'm like, you're not happy? Just share a little bit of that wealth with me. I'm sure I'll be happy, right? And we think about that, but the truth is that money cannot make us happy. And the Apostle Paul warns us against the deceitfulness of riches. While God does not promise us wealth or luxury, he does promise us if we are faithful, he will provide for all our needs. And you see, not only that, but God's promises also are based on reality. Whereas Babylon is offering us something that for the majority of us, for 99% of us, is unattainable. It's fantasy. But how many of in our generation, in our day, are just going after the wealth of Babylon, going after luxury, and they will never attain it? Fast money, quick money, easy money. It doesn't happen that way. How many Christians haven't lost their way seeking that wealth, trying to keep up with the Joneses, trying to follow that American dream that is so elusive, and in the process, they lose their family, and they lose their own souls and their health as well. God's promises are based in reality. In fact, I even want to say God's promises are based on hard work. In Genesis chapter 3, he says it's with the sweat of your brow that you will eat bread all the days of your life. There is a blessing in struggle. There is a blessing in trial. But Babylon stands afar and offers us this elusive luxury and wealth. Not only that, but there's a reference here. It says, they stand afar off and they say, oh, you great city. Oh, you mighty city, Babylon. Now, this is literally a reference to Daniel chapter 4, and we've referenced this in a few sermons ago, in Daniel chapter 4, verse 30, where Nebuchadnezzar is looking over Babylon. And he says, do you remember what he says? Is not this the great Babylon? It's the same exact words, mega Babylon, great, the great Babylon, the great city. Is not this the great Babylon, he says, which I have built, he says, with my power and for the glory of my majesty. And Revelation 17, speaking about the end of time and end time Babylon, it's using these same words. And the truth is that that's exactly how it is. It is only the great men of the earth. Listen to me here. It's only the great men of the earth that have the ability to build amazing cities, cities literally that you marvel at. And when we look at history, in fact, when we look at the Bible, we see Egypt, one of the great empires of the world, and we see they're great in their amazing cities, and they're great in their amazing monuments. When we go to Babylon, we don't have images of it, but we understand, or we've been told, that Babylon had one of the ancient wonders of the world, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. In fact, there are still parts of Babylon that archaeologists have dug up, and they've reconstructed, and we can just have a glimpse of the grandeur of Babylon. But when we continue through history, next slide, please, we go to Assyria, and we go to Nineveh, and it was also an amazing city. And then as we continue through history, we see other great cities. We see Athens, and the Parthenon is still there, though there's not too much remaining there anymore. But we can have glimpses of what the glory of Greece used to be in its heyday. And we go to another world empire, and we go to Rome, and we see the power and the majesty in this amazing city of Rome. And Revelation 17 and 18, as it's speaking about the great city, it's making a reference to all these great empires and all these great men who are able to build these great cities at whom we marvel at and we stand in awe even today. Now, Revelation 17, 18, it says that the great city, Babylon, is the city that rules over the kings of the earth. And so when we look at history, wherever the center of human civilization is, this is important, wherever the center of human civilization is, there is Babylon. There is the woman. Do you follow me? We can trace it through history. We can trace it even today. So I thought about today. And I said, well, what about the world-class cities of today? And then I started thinking about, well, you know, I grew up in, you guys know where I grew up in, right? Yes, I heard it over there, right? Houston. I grew up in Houston, Texas, all right? Now, I mean, to be honest with you guys, speaking about world-class cities, right? I used to think Houston was, oh, no, this is going to be sad. It's going to sound bad. I used to think Houston was a world-class city. That's all I had seen, right? And then I remember the first time, we're going to have to cut this out of the podcast for anyone who's listening from Houston. But, and then I remember the first time I went to New York City. And I saw what a world-class city looks like. And then I was like, Houston, not so much, right? You go to LA, you go to Washington, D.C., you go to these cities, and these are world-class cities. I remember one time I was in LA, and I was on the Griffin Park, on the observatory, and I was just looking over the city, and it just hit me, and it said, this is an incredible, amazing city. And not just the actual physical city, but the minds that are drawn to the city and what this city has done to the rest of the world. This city and the men and the minds that are here have been able to influence the entire world through Hollywood. Incredible influence, incredible city. And then these last few years, I've had the opportunity to go to Europe, and my sister-in-law lives out in Paris. And I remember when I was, you know, my wife was saying, yeah, let's go out to Paris. I was like, Paris, Europe, who cares about that? And then I went there, and I saw Paris, and I was immediately struck. And I immediately fell in love with Paris, and I just love going to Paris, and I think you guys have talked, I've talked to you guys about my love affair with Paris, you know, but it's just, it's amazing, it's an amazing city. I love the city. Great cities. In fact, the book of Revelation, Revelation chapter 11, speaks about the role of France in Bible prophecy. Paris is a world-class city. It's no wonder that people, especially young people, are flocking to the cities. There's something there in the cities that are attractive. Statistics indicate that in the 1800s, 6% of the population in the United States of America in the 1800s, of course, we were just getting started at that time as a nation, but 6% of the population in the United States of America lived in the cities. After the Industrial Revolution in the 1900s, it moved to 40% of the United States population lived in the city. Today, the number is 80% of the United States population lives in the city. What is it about the cities that just attracts us, that draws us to them? And as beautiful as all these cities are, it seems that God is forgotten in their midst. That's the truth. There's these statistics that show that if you live in the country, you are more susceptible and it's more conducive to religious and spiritual impressions if you live in the country. And then I started thinking about this. I was like, haven't you heard something about Seventh-day Adventists and we speak about going to the, wait, flee the cities, can you guys finish that phrase for me, right? And moving to the country, right? Country living. As Seventh-day Adventists, we talk about it all the time. There may be something there. And I already preached about this in my podcast on the Alps. You can find it on the podcast there. But it seems that the country is more conducive to religious and spiritual impressions, whereas when we're in the city, all we see are the works of man and the grandeur of the great men of the earth, and that just seems to kill a desire for God and for the things of heaven. Revelation 18, it speaks of Babylon as a great city, but the Bible tells us here that no, we too have a great city. Hebrews chapter 11, it tells us that we too have a city with foundations whose architect and whose builder is God. All right. Now, if we can marvel at Paris and all the monuments that these great men have sculpted and have designed, if we can marvel at their architecture and their engineering, what do you think God's architect and engineering looks like? What do you think his buildings look like? What do you think his city looks like? And that's why the Apostle Paul tells us that that city, that New Jerusalem, is a better country. It's a heavenly one, but the catch is this. It requires faith. It requires faith. The cities of this world, Babylon, are right here and right now. You want it, it's right there. What God is offering us requires faith. And it requires patience. It requires us to lift our eyes above this world and look to heaven, look to something better. And I'm thinking of that song where it says, right, turn your eyes upon who? Jesus. Look full in his wonderful face, and then the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. And as Christians, as Seventh-day Adventists, that's why I encourage you every day we need to be focusing and spending time with God. Every day we need to be allowing God to light the lamp that we have and make sure that our lamp does not go out. And I preached a sermon about that already. The importance, because if we're just looking at these cities, we will be blown away. But if we're looking at God, we'll be able to have that faith that will enable us to see that better city that God has for us. And so as we continue to look at the beauty of Babylon, in verse 11, here it mentions the merchants of the earth. And it says that they will weep and they will mourn over her, over Babylon, over the great city. They will mourn over her because no one buys their cargoes anymore. At the end of time, and this is in the context of the end of time, and the seven last plagues are falling, and people are dying left and right, and what are the merchants of the earth worried about? Yeah, they're only worried about the reason they're weeping isn't because of the seven last plagues that are falling. The reason they're weeping is because no one is buying what they have to sell. And as I think about this phrase, no one buying, wait a minute, isn't there this phrase about buying somewhere else in the book of Revelation, Revelation chapter 13, when it speaks about the mark of the beast, it says no one can buy or sell unless they have the mark of the beast, right, or the name of the beast, or whatever it is, right? And so here it is that implementation of the mark of the beast is actually backfiring on them. They're trying to persecute a group of who is being faithful to God and being faithful to Jesus. But at the end of time, that will backfire on them. And in the end, the economy will crash and no one will be buying anything anymore. And I just mentioned it as well here. Revelation chapter 18 tells us that the economy will play a major role in the end of time. Do we hear about the economy in the news today? That's like every day, right? That's like all we hear about is the economy. The Bible tells us that the economy will play a major role in the end of time. Not only that, but the Bible tells us it will crash. What's one of the best things we can do if the economy crashes? Practical. Make sure you don't have any debt. If the economy crashes, make sure you're debt-free. If the economy crashes, make sure you take a Dave Ramsey seminar, and that's why I sent it out to you guys, right? Dave Ramsey tells us how to live in these kinds of times, right? We need to make sure we're debt-free, number one. But I think the Bible also tells us to live debt-free. Number two, he says that we should have at least a 6 months savings so that if we do lose our job, if there is any crisis, we have enough money to pay the mortgage. We have enough money to pay any bills, which, you know, well, hopefully we won't have any, right, any bills. But we'll have enough money to pay our utilities. We may have to cut cable. We may have to cut cable. We may have to cut even our cell phone service, right? But at least we'll have electricity, right? At least we'll have food on our table, right? 6 months. The best we can do, the best thing that we can do if the economy crashes is be debt-free. The best thing we can do if the economy crashes is be faithful to the Lord in tithes and offerings. That's why it's so relevant. And God promises that he will take care of us. We had a little blip in January, right? The government shut down. And people didn't even have enough money to get them through 1 month. Because we're living at the edge. We're living at the extremity of our means. In fact, we're going to get to that here in a little bit here, of what that looks like. That's actually why the economy crashes, because the entire economy is living at the edge, borrowing more money than they have income. The merchants of the earth will weep and will mourn because no one buys their cargoes anymore. And let's look at their cargoes. We're talking about the beauty of Babylon. It says cargoes of gold and cargoes of silver, and cargoes of precious stones, and cargoes of pearls, and fine linen, and purple silk, and scarlet cloth, and every sort of citron wood, and articles of every kind made of ivory, and of costly wood, and of bronze, and iron, and marble. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, that material is beautiful. We just bought a house a couple years ago, and we're still trying to furnish our house, right? And I keep telling my wife, you know, we got to have the best furniture here at the best cost. It's kind of, you know, we're kind of on a budget here. And so I said, I want solid wood furniture, fancy furniture, but it has to come cheap. And so we're waiting. We still haven't found anything, but I'm sure one of these days there's going to be a sale somewhere. We're going to be able to buy what we get, right? But that's what we want, right? We don't want cheapy stuff. We want the good stuff. I mean, even for this church, you know, I look at the floor out there, and I was like, we're not just putting any old linoleum out on that floor, right? We want the nicest marble and the nicest tile because it's the house of the Lord. These are the cargoes that Babylon is selling. It's the best stuff. Cargoes of gold and silver and precious stones. Who doesn't want that? Come on. Who doesn't want that? And cargoes of cinnamon and of spice and of incense and of myrrh and of frankincense. And these are speaking about perfumes and food and of wine. Oh, isn't that a big deal today now, right? If you want to show yourself that you're sophisticated and fancy, right? You put a little bit of a wine there and you take a little Instagram post and you're all of a sudden sophisticated, right? Of wine and of olive oil and all the fine flour and the wheat and the cattle and the sheep and horses and carriages. I don't know if I have horses and carriages today, but probably cars and horsepower today, right? all the best things Babylon has, but then it says, they also sell bodies and they sell souls of men. You see, Babylon is beautiful, but God is offering us something better. In fact, the truth is, when you go through this list, a lot of these items are the same items that were listed in the use of the sanctuary temple in the Old Testament. You know, God doesn't have a problem with this. In fact, a lot of these same items, God referenced them in Revelation chapter 21 and 22, and it's part of the New Jerusalem. It's part of life on heaven. God is offering all this to us. The difference is we don't have to sell our souls, and we don't have to sell our bodies to Babylon. In fact, the Bible tells us that God gave us his only son so that instead of being slaves, instead of having to sell ourselves, he gave his only son so that we can be free. I don't know about you, but I just thank Jesus for that. That I don't have to fall slave to the rat race, that I can be free in Jesus Christ. And they will say, the fruit that your soul longed for is gone from you forever. And all your luxury and all your splendor have vanished, never to be recovered. And the word used here for longed for is the word for covetousness or for lusting after. And it's saying, Babylon, you longed after this. You coveted after this. And I start thinking, an economy, is it possible to build an economy on covetousness? You know, isn't that what the American economy is built on? And anytime, you know, the economy is down, they have sales and they start encouraging us to do what? To go buy things and to spend money that I don't have, to buy things I don't need, right? To get in debt, and I don't need to get in debt. An economy built on covetousness, and that's what it says. The fruit, all those things that you longed for, that you lusted for, they are gone, never to be recovered ever again. The beauty of Babylon, verse 22 and verse 23, it even mentions the music of harpists and of musicians and of pipers and of trumpeteers. Now, those are instruments that they used back then, right? But what it's describing here, it's describing beautiful music. It's describing, should I say the music industry? The entertainment industry of Babylon? And isn't it the best? Come on, any guys, you've been to a concert? No? Okay, all right, I wouldn't say that, right? Oh, it's just incredible, the music of Babylon. The entertainment of Babylon. And verse 23 will even say, your merchants were the world's important people or the great men of the earth, and by your magic spell, all nations were led astray. Some translations say, by your sorcery, everyone was led astray. And what the Bible describes in the end of time is it's not just the inhabitants of the earth that are being led astray and deceived by the beauty of Babylon, but it's the kings of the earth, the governments of the earth that are being led astray by the spell, the magic spell of Babylon, the nations, the religion, everything is together, working together, being led astray by Babylon. What we see here in Revelation chapter 18 is the climax of human civilization crashing down, all the luxury, all the wealth, all the excess, all the opulence, all the decadence coming to nothing. Now, if you're having a hard time imagining this, I want to show you a video right now. I'm going to show you a video of luxury. Can you guys handle it? I'm going to show you a video of luxury. And they're going to give in this video, they're going to give numbers. They're going to give dollars, or it's in pounds. I want you maybe to convert them to euros or something like that. I want you to keep track of those numbers. Can you guys do that? All right, you guys do that. Keep track of the numbers, keep track of the items, and then I want you to add them all up at the end. All right, ready? My friends, that's Babylon. Now, I'm not saying Monaco is Babylon, right? But that lifestyle, that's exactly what we just read in Revelation chapter 18. All of that. Did someone, you guys, add that up? All right, I got 220. All right, 225. Pounds, let's say euros, 225 euros per person to ride in that helicopter, right? Unless you have to go like a regular person in a car or something, like, God forbid, right? I got that, my own helicopter. How much for the supercar? 125,000 pounds or euros, all right? I'm like, 125,000, and what did he say? Monaco has the majority of billionaires in the world per capita. All right, here's another one. He says, Monaco is known as a place of supercars, super yachts, and supermodels. And then that super old billionaire guy says, well, the supermodels, they come with the super yacht. That's kind of funny, but at the same time, not so funny. How much does that super yacht cost? 120,000 euros per week. If you actually want to buy it, it costs $1.5 million, and that's kind of a cheapy one, right? And they threw out a few names of, what was that? That's a little one? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And yeah, Sean Connery, George Clooney, they threw out some big names. That when he went into the casino, and just, I don't know what you call those things. You call those chips. I don't know what you call those plates that he had. He was like, here's €1 million right here. Let me see here. One of the hotels cost 11,000 pounds a night. Another one cost 8,000 pounds a night, and he threw some big names. J-Lo and Rihanna stayed there. Now, when I went to Paris and I was taking the tour, there was one hotel that they told us, no, a room in that hotel right there costs 36,000 euros a night. 36,000 euros a night. And I started doing the calculations. I was like, how much do I earn? And I'm like, after taxes. And I mean, I couldn't even afford. I mean, that's a whole year's worth, you know, just to stay at that one hotel for one night. And they dropped some big names, Justin Timberlake and, I don't know, Lady Gaga and some other people, you know, who had stayed there. And I'm like, but wait a minute, a year's worth of my income to stay in one place, you know, for one night. And I started thinking, but in their Bible story of one person who spent an entire year's wages on one thing, and who was that? Mary Magdalene, and she spent it on that perfume, but she didn't spend it on herself. She spent it on Jesus, on God. That's the difference between Babylon and the followers of Jesus. Then it mentions, you know, God forbid the dining, right? God forbid that I'm eating something that someone else ordered. No, I need to have my own private chef at my table cooking, preparing whatever I want. How much is that? 450 pounds per couple. If we add it up, I don't know if someone wants to add that up. That's more money than I would probably ever have in my entire lifetime. That's Babylon, my friends. And it's beautiful, isn't it? I'm like, sign me up, I'm ready. But you see, God has something better in store for us. In this all-encompassing description of Revelation chapter 18, the angel is saying, Babylon, are you ready for this? Babylon is Hollywood. Babylon is the entertainment industry. Babylon is materialism. Babylon is fashion. Babylon is big business. Babylon is oppressive lawmaking. Babylon is corrupt and inept politics. Babylon is technology used for nefarious means. Babylon is false science. Babylon is false religion. Babylon is false educational systems. Babylon are false economic systems, and yes, even systems of oppression, economic systems of oppression. Babylon is racism. Babylon is everything you read and everything that you hear about in the news, the injustice and the violence and the hate, everything that is wrong with this world. In fact, when you read verse 24 of Revelation chapter 18, it says, in her, in Babylon, was found the blood of the prophets, the blood of God's holy people, but then it says, the blood of all who have been slaughtered on the earth. Are you catching that? All right, it's not just God's people that she's responsible. It's anyone who has ever died because of injustice, whether they're Christ followers or not. Anyone who has ever experienced oppression and injustice and have been killed and have been slaughtered unjustly is there. Babylon is the cause of it. And so Babylon is beautiful, isn't it? But Babylon is charming, isn't it? Babylon is alluring, isn't it? But I had a professor of mine at the seminary once tell us, and he was actually speaking about pornography, but he used this illustration. He says, if you could see behind the screen, if you could peel that screen back, he said, you would see a demon staring back at you. So too, my friends, with Babylon. And so the angel asked John, why do you marvel? Why do you marvel? Babylon is fallen. The first part of Revelation 18 says, Babylon is fallen and has become the haunt and the habitation of demons, is what Revelation 18 says. Babylon is fallen and is the habitation of unclean spirits and everything that is impure and everything that is detestable. Furthermore, it says, "And all nations, they have drunk of her maddening wine, and they are all inebriated, and they're intoxicated with the lure of Babylon. The kings of the earth have committed adultery with her. The merchants of the earth have grown rich from her excessive luxuries." And the truth is, as Christians, we don't have the power to resist Babylon. Yeah, we see it and we understand it and we realize that it's a dead end. We realize it's the road to hell, and yet we still continue walking towards it. And do you know why? Because we need Jesus. We need Jesus. We need his spirit every day. And I mentioned this, we need his spirit every day to keep our lamp lighted, to imbue us with faith. The Bible says faith comes by hearing, and hearing the word of God. If you're not spending time every day with God, then your faith won't be edified. And Babylon will be able to cast its magic spell over you. And it's not one Christian who has lost its way following the way of Babylon. Because we have neglected to hear God. Faith comes by hearing. Hearing comes from the word of God. In fact, faith doesn't even come from us. God is the one who imbues us with faith. Faith is a gift as we spend time with him, listening to him, knowing how wonderful and how better and how more lasting the things that he has in store for us are. And so this morning I ask you, Jacksonville First, what decision will you make today? Do we need to ask Jesus, "Jesus, break the spell of Babylon over my life"? Do we need to ask Jesus to deliver us from the spell of Babylon? I invite you this morning to think about that, because what God has in store is something better.
This podcast is brought to you by the Jacksonville First Seventh-day Adventist Church. Connect with us on www.jaxsda.org or on Facebook and YouTube. We look forward to sharing more inspiring messages with you.